We start again with the deepening crisis and carnage in the Middle East. The pause in hostilities over the weekend replaced by one of the heaviest nights of bombardment in Gaza. A fuel tank supplying the area's only power station has been hit, with reports that power to the 1.8 million people in the Gaza Strip has now been cut.
I'm now south of Gaza City. This is the main fuel storage facility for Gaza's only power plant. It too was hit by an airstrike overnight, and there's not much you have to say about it. You can just look at it. Huge fire and flames and a massive plume of smoke stretching up into the sky. And there are still Israeli planes overhead and sounds of explosions.
That's BBC reporter Chris Morris on the ground in Gaza. Earlier, one senior PLO official called for a 24-hour humanitarian ceasefire, something that has since been rejected by Hamas. This once again underlines the divisions in the Palestinian leadership, with different factions pulling in opposite directions. What's not in dispute is one direction Hamas seems determined to pursue and is a key Israeli target: the sophisticated network of tunnels built by Hamas and used by its supporters to transport weapons and launch attacks on Israel. Jody Rodorin, Jerusalem bureau chief for our partner, The New York Times, recently got a tour of these tunnels, and she joins us now from Jerusalem. Jody, welcome back to the show.
Hi, Todd.
Good to have you. Jody, it's clear that the Israeli Defense Forces want the world to see what they're dealing with in terms of Hamas tunnels that run under their territory. You went inside, so take us inside some of these tunnels.
Well, it's interesting because we've heard about the sort of labyrinthian network under Gaza with lots of sort of offshoots and shafts, and this was not like that. I sort of expected that. This tunnel is quite a bit underground, about 46 feet down, and you have to duck to get into it, but then you can stand up. Pretty much medium height person can stand. It's very, I think, professionally built, concrete walls and curved concrete top. And the one I was in was just totally straight and not much going on in it. There was an iron rod running along one wall where electricity cables were. And there was a lattice kind of metal thing on the bottom that they said was a tracks for carriages to truck out the sand. And they said both of those things showed them that this tunnel wasn't finished, because the ones that have been used in to penetrate Israel for attacks, they've checked and they don't have those things anymore. So they thought the fact that especially the carriage tracks were still there meant they were still digging.
So, Jody, there's a network of these tunnels inside Gaza, of course, and some of them extend into Israeli territory. How are they used? Of course, weapons must be transported through people. That's kind of obvious. But how does Hamas really use the tunnels?
Right. As you say, there are different kinds of tunnels. There are smuggling tunnels. There are, I think, storage and rocket manufacturing tunnels within Gaza. The ones that lead into Israeli territory are something that people have known about for a little while and have become an increasing focus of this war. And those, the Israelis fear, and I think they've seen borne out over the last couple of weeks, Palestinian militants can come into Israel and attack either soldiers or civilians. The real fear is that they'll come to some kibbutz and spray the dining hall with machine gun fire. Or in one case, they were found some tranquilizers and plastic handcuffs. And so the fear is that they try to kidnap people. Last night, there was an attack actually closer to the border through a tunnel on an Israeli military post, a watchtower and a building right next to it. And they killed five Israeli soldiers and then were trying to actually take a body of one of the soldiers back through the tunnel. And soldiers from the watchtower shot at them and killed or injured one of them. And then they did all get back into the tunnel, but without an Israeli body.
So, Jody Rodorin, you write in your piece about sort of the psychological fear, sort of the group psychology fear of tunnels that exists in Israel. But what about the actual strategic threat of these tunnels? Often, especially with terrorism or in a war, the psychological fear of a threat is different than the actual strategic threat itself.
Right. I mean, it's really interesting. One of the many kind of asymmetries and imbalances in this conflict and in this particular war between Gaza and Israel is in kind of what constitutes a casualty or what kinds of impacts you can have on each other's society. So for years, the primary tool from Gaza was rocket fire. And the primary impact in Israel was not really death, but it was this constant running into bomb shelters and this kind of disruption of life. And now there's a new thing going on. I think people really had learned to kind of cope with the rockets, both between the bomb shelters and with this Iron Dome system that shoots them out of the sky as they come to cities. But they don't seem to have an answer to the tunnel threat. And it's totally freaking people out. A lot of the people who live in those areas have left their homes for now weeks. The threat is really permeating the society.
So, Jody, I'd like to ask sort of about the timing of Israeli officials allowing you and other reporters into the tunnels. Of course, Benjamin Netanyahu remains very, very popular at home. But in the international community, there's a great deal of condemnation, and even in the United States, some ambivalence about the asymmetric conflict that's going on between Israel and Gaza. What do you make of the timing here? Is there a sense that the Israeli justification because of rockets has sort of faltered, and they want those of us in the United States or readers of the New York Times, for instance, to see, hey, there's another threat here. It's not in the air, but it's below the ground?
Well, I want to clarify one thing, too, because I do think that the Israelis are pushing the tunnel story, but I asked to go in the tunnels. So I don't think, you know, I've been criticized for kind of just taking what the IDF hands out, what the Israeli military hands out. And I do want to be clear that I asked to go.
Indeed.
That said, you definitely have seen from the moment during this war when the first tunnel attack came, which was Thursday morning, July 17th, and then that night they went into a ground operation. And you've seen really since then, it's, you know, you almost never hear an Israeli leader talking without them mentioning the tunnels. They've published a lot of photos of them and videos of them being blown up. I think that they probably rightly feel like for all of the horrific images that people around the world are seeing of the devastation and death being wrought on Gaza, that there is a sympathy around the world for the idea that, you know, your enemy should not be able to tunnel into your territory and attack people. So, yeah, they're certainly pushing it, but I don't think they're pushing it in like some way that has nothing to do with something real. It really is what they're afraid of.
Jody Reduran is Jerusalem bureau chief for our partner, The New York Times. You can read her story going inside Hamas tunnels in The New York Times. Jody, thank you.
Thank you so much.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing. Or
politics.
Country music.
Hockey.
Sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.